Well, the midterm elections are now history. The Democrats took over the House. The Senate pretty much stayed the same. Republicans gained a few seats. Donald Trump is still president. That oozing sore pussy thing on my rear end is not clearing up. Like in a divorce, the Democrats got the House. The president now looks scared, befuddled, making no sense. Well, it's hard to tell the difference. Obviously losing it, getting angry at a press conference, losing his cool, pacing around. I think it's starting to affect him. It's so ridiculous.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Unbelievable stuff.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Wake me up from this nightmare.
Whatever.
Sing along. It's catchy. It's catchy, too. Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good night.
Good night.
It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Nicely done.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Don't answer me. Don't talk to me like that. I'll revoke your press pass. I don't know. Well, things will be a little bit different now that the Democrats control the House. The House body of government is, that's the body that actually checks on the president, keeps him in check. They do investigations. They give him colonoscopies when it's not called for. They keep on top of this roaming little bitch. So that's a good thing. But it also makes the president that more unstable, which makes our country that more unstable, which makes me that much more sad. But my purpose today is not to speak politics to you, because every time I do, I get emails and things that say, Ron, can you keep it light? We love the humor part of the show. Stop being so serious. Well, damn it. Damn it. Things are serious. Damn it. That's like having your delusional, crazy Uncle Pete throwing china against the wall and throwing bottles of wine on your nice new carpet. It's like that.
Ron, that analogy sucked.
Yeah, I know it sucked. I realize that. Anyway, I almost had the same sinking feeling that I did when Trump became president after the general election. Not quite, but it was that kind. I just wanted Trump to just go somewhere and get lost. You know, like one-way ticket to something where he can't return ever to harm us.
Oh, God. God. And this red state, blue state thing.
I feel more divided from people than I ever have. I don't want to go to a red state at all. I'm not going into a red state ever. I'm not going to a red state. You kidding me?
Hey, what's that blue guy doing in our red state? Get him out of here. Come on, get him out of here. Will you get him out of here? Blue guy. Look, he's a blue, hey, blue guy. I'm not going there. I'm not. I don't need that. I don't need that. Well, hi. How are you? And they wonder why people drink alcohol. You know who doesn't drink alcohol? Donald Trump. He doesn't drink. If he did, oh my God, it could be even worse. I mean, drinking alcohol doesn't give you a restful night's sleep. Donald Trump doesn't sleep anyway, and he doesn't even drink alcohol. He's tweeting at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Go to bed. Go to bed. Have sex with the wife. Do something. And Fox Television, Fox News isn't the only thing on the TV set, Don. Oh, he knows that. Oh, he watches his competitors like a hawk. Some people say Donald Trump is incredibly strategically intelligent. I say he's a six-year-old child just lashing out. That's all he is. I don't know. I'm not, no, stop, you got me started. Wasn't me. I had no intention about talking to him today, about him today at all. Although I still have this dream where I somehow get into the White House and they escort me into the Oval Office and Trump is sitting behind that desk. There's no real papers on his desk because he can't read. Just big Fox News television set. And I walk into the Oval Office and I'm unescorted. I'm by myself and Don's sitting there. And Don looks up at me and he says, Ron, how you been? Fine, Don. How have you been? Oh, I've been all right. Everything I do is perfect. You know, Don, that's what I came to the White House to talk to you about. What is it, Ron? You suck! You suck! That's my dream. And then Trump's response to me yelling at him saying, you suck, his response is, first of all, Ron, do you know that I'm the president? Well, yeah. Well, of course I know. That's how I know. You suck! And Don says, Ron, how can I make you happy? How can I change things so that you are happy? Because, Ron, you are so smart. You know everything. I listen to everything you say. You don't know it, but I listen to your show every day, 5 times over. I binge listen to you, Ron. What can I do to make this better? Well, Don, one simple word that reverberates in my head would be my advice to you. Ron, what is that word? Please tell me. Don, that word is leave. Pack your bags. Get your family the hell out of this house. Go home. Go sell your ties or your suits or whatever the hell you do. Go exploit beautiful women in beauty pageants. Go be a guest on professional wrestling. Do what you do best. Nothing. You're like a heartbeat away from the talent of Kim Kardashian. Sell your shit and get out of my face. That's what I would say. That is my dream. Unfortunately, that may never happen. So, what are you going to do? My guest today later on in the show is kind of a direct result of things. There's an author who's written a book called Red Flags, and it's about China, and that China is not in a great situation. I thought they were. I thought China was like the new leader of the world. That's what Donald said. But apparently China is having some great economic and social problems of their own. Don't know much about China, but I'm going to learn today. So we're going to speak to that author a little bit later on. In the meantime, thank you so much for being here. Do I owe any of you any money? I'm not too certain.
You are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show, but you need to know that it's okay. We all make mistakes, and we must learn to forgive ourselves. The universe wants us to be happy, whether or not we listen to the Ron Van Dam Show. Nothing is forever, including the Ron Van Dam Show. You will be fine. The universe will try to forget about this one.
Remember a time when people would walk down the street and tip their heads or their hats to other people and say, "Good morning. How are you today?" "I'm fine. How are you?" "I'm fine. And you?" "I'm fine. And how are you?" "I'm fine. And how's the family?" "They're fine." "And how are you really?" "I'm really fine." "Have yourself a great day, will you please?" "I will. And the best to you and your family." "No, and your family. And your family too." "Have a great day. You too. Good talking to you." You know, Bob, I never told you how much I respect you, how much you have meant to me in my life as a mentor, as a person, as a great human being, as an influence on our very lives. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome. Who are you?
Bob?
I'm not Bob.
Oh, sorry, I had the wrong person. You have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did I ever take the time to tell you I appreciate you? You are someone special. On this earth, you play an important role. You are someone to be admired, to be put on a pedestal, to be thanked and adored. I don't know how many people tell you this, but you belong. You are a part of who you are. Continue on that path of wisdom and prophecy. Take my hand, and I will lead you to that place. What is wrong with me that I have this music playing and I'm getting so involved in this respect thing? It is because we've lost it. It's gone. It's been dissolved through divisiveness and anger and division. And I long for the day when we can be reunited and bow upon each other and hold hands and move forward into the light of greatness. Shall that day ever come? I don't know, but I keep dreaming and I keep hoping, and maybe someday that will occur. And when it does, I won't have to do stupid little bits like this to demonstrate how angry I am that we don't have this going on right now. Peace. I wish you peace.
Gentlemen, you know that when you decide to get engaged, you'll be making one of the most important investments of your life. Think about it. From the moment you get down on bended knee and present the ring, how much you actually love someone will be judged solely on the size of the stone you buy. And not just by the one you love, but by literally everyone she knows. And strangers. At Schlickerscheck the Jewelers, we know that when you're about to cough up what amounts to a few months' rent to obtain the exclusive naming rights to a vagina, you want to be able to be sure that you've made the best choice. So if you've decided it's time to staple gun your man tackle to a single hitching post and to never be able to experience the simple joy of a meaningless hookup without handing over half your stuff, come to Schlickerscheck the Jewelers and see our amazing line of certified, high-quality, shallow female ego strokers. Take it from me, Herbert Schlickerscheck. I'm not just your local jeweler. I've been married 6.5 times. Vegas marriages, boys. Very easy to annul when the shrew goes south on you. And she will.
Hey, George.
Hey. Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. George Magnus joins us now. He's an associate at the China Center at Oxford University, research associate at the School of Oriental and African Studies, and formerly chief economist of UBS. And he's written extensively on the subject that we're going to be talking about, and that is it's about China and what direction it's going in. Let me first tell you that as a layperson, I thought China was like in total control of its economy and doing really well and owns half of this country, and come to find out that they've got their own problems.
Yeah, it's a little bit more complex and a little bit more nuanced than,
sure,
than the way you laid it out, although I can understand that is how a lot of people think.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I think most people understand, you know, for the last kind of 25 or 35 years, I mean, the Chinese economy has been on a bit of a roll.
Right.
And the reason it has managed to string together in such incredible speed a very, very high standard of living for certainly most of its citizens,
uh-huh,
certainly by comparison with other emerging countries, is because of lots of changes they were prepared to make. In the way in which they governed themselves and in the way in which they learned, including from Western governments and Western countries,
uh-huh,
different ways of blending their own kind of state-run, authoritarian-run kind of system with entrepreneurship and market mechanisms and
mm-hmm,
the use of prices as signals and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So they really were very successful and very pragmatic in blending all of these things together and making them come to the fore.
Uh-huh.
And so nowadays, if we just fast forward to 2018, in fact, just as we speak together, there is a little bit of a kind of a spat going on in China,
uh-huh,
between some kind of economics professors who are being kind of shut down and stifled by the government, who are trying to say, don't keep on going on all about the China model, the China model, the China model, which is with its emphasis on, you know, state control,
uh-huh,
and the party and so on and so forth. Because actually much of what we've been successful in doing, we've been successful because we've adapted kind of Western ideas and actually made them successful for us. So China is going through this kind of patch at the moment, really, of trying to, it is kind of questioning where it is and whether it's actually going down a wrong direction.
Oh. So is democracy indeed, well, it's not democracy, I wouldn't call it democracy, but is our part of the hemisphere kind of filtering into their way of life and their economy?
Well, so part of the case that I'm kind of making in the book, Red Flag,
yes,
really, is that since 2012, in fact, since Xi Jinping became president, and I would say especially in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a very dramatic change in the governance system in China,
mm-hmm,
and in his way of molding the political system, which is a bit of a throwback to the way things used to be under Mao Zedong politically speaking, not necessarily in terms of the economy.
Right.
But I think that that is a big change. It's not the China that, you know, our parents and grandparents knew. And it's not the China which gained its deserved reputation for being pragmatic
right.
and for
right.
Being open to new ideas. This is a more authoritarian, a more controlling, a more repressive China, which I think is not as well equipped to deal with the economic issues that I've laid out in the book.
Interesting. And again, it's somewhat a surprise to many people that China would have a debt problem, although their monies are just created willy-nilly, I would assume. Again, because of the United States owes them so much money, technically, that you would figure they'd be, on paper, in a very good position.
Well, again, that's the kind of myth that I'm trying to kind
so
of unravel here,
yeah.
because it is true that, first of all, we should say China does have a debt problem.
Mm-hmm.
It has accumulated in mm-hmm. a very, very short period of time,
mm-hmm.
which basically goes back to the financial crisis in 2007, 2008,
mm-hmm.
when the Chinese rolled out a stimulus program mm-hmm. largely based on bank credit, which amounted to about 14% of their GDP.
Right.
So it was a huge stimulus program and a huge credit creation program. And it did mark the beginning of a credit addiction
mm-hmm.
from which they've only just shown a kind of a willingness to try to back away from if they can. So a lot of people say, of course, quite correctly, that this China's debt is not like the kind of the debt that floored Latin America in the 1980s, which was predominantly dollar debt. It's not like the debt that floored Asia in the 1990s,
uh-huh.
which again was largely U.S. dollar and
okay.
foreign currency debt.
So how's it
different? But it is domestic debt. Uh-huh. But it's also not correct to say that countries that have domestic debt don't have problems. So the financial crisis in 2007-2008 in the United States was
yes.
a domestic debt crisis.
Right.
Japan had a domestic debt crisis in the 1980s, so
right.
it does happen to these countries too, but they manifest themselves in a different way.
Correct, yes, that I do understand. So the point of red flags is exactly what?
Well, it's really to identify and help people kind of understand
mm-hmm.
that China has a kind of a confluence, really, of
mm-hmm.
several important issues which are all coming at it at the same time. So one is the debt problem. Another is the challenge of trying to keep its currency stable.
Right.
A third is rapid aging, which is China is the most rapidly aging country on the planet.
Sorry.
Not the oldest, but
right.
the most rapidly aging.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has an issue to do that economists call the middle income trap, which is about how few countries actually manage to graduate from being middle income status to being rich. And that requires a lot of focus on the quality of institutions like the legal system, the competitive environment,
uh-huh.
the regulations and productivity and so on. So the issue really is how does China manage to get a grip on these things with its governance system, which I think is not as good as its
right.
as previous versions were.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now it's compounded all by the trade war, which has broken out
yes.
between China and the United States.
Well, that's what I wanted to just touch upon for a second. Is Trump incredibly intelligent? I doubt it's so, but to put his foot into the situation at this given time, does he recognize that China is in a faulting situation and it is the best time to intercede, or is he just, you know, is some other reason?
Well, I mean, it would be nice to think that this was all very strategically thought out.
Yes.
I suspect that's probably not the case, because
that's
obviously on the during the election campaign in 2016,
yes.
The president was quite vocal about
yes.
his views about China.
Right.
And there was a period, obviously, last year when things were a little bit quiet, when the two presidents of the United States and China were kind of working together to try to mollify North Korea and so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah,
but, of course, as everybody knows, this year this conflict has kind of broken out, and then some. And, I think, to be honest, my own view about this is that that there is it's questionable about whether tariffs are the right way to go about achieving the White House's objectives. But I think that a lot of people on both sides of the political divide in the United States, and certainly in other countries, in the United Kingdom, in France, Germany, etc., I mean, certainly share the concerns of the U.S. Trade Representative, for example, about the use of China's industrial policies when it comes to technology, which is intimately linked to military capacity, to its treatment of intellectual property, to technology transfer, market access, the investment practices of Chinese companies when they go abroad. So these things, I think, are all kind of in good faith reservations and questions, which I think a lot of people now have about China as not as the country that it used to be, 10 or 20 years ago, but that it is now, which is much more an adversary and rival than just a customer and a competitor.
Well,
for our companies.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes a question of, are we going to hurt each other back and forth and make both of us weaker, or are we going to be quiet, leave it alone, and we will both profit on both ends? So, and I guess when you start challenging, you're going to get the downslide on both sides. But I mean, that's the way I see it.
Yes, I'm afraid that. I'm afraid that's probably likely, because in contrast to what President Trump has said sometimes, I mean, I don't think most economists would kind of argue that there is never a winner in a trade war, because consumers end up paying higher tariffs. I mean, steel prices, for example, in the United States have gone up since the tariffs were imposed in January. Steel prices have gone up hugely this year. And there are more users of steel than there are producers of steel.
That's just the
start. So consumers pay tariffs, companies pay tariffs, production and trade is much less vibrant than it otherwise would be.
Yes.
And so, unfortunately, the point of a trade war is to inflict more pain on your opponent than they inflict on you.
Yeah.
And that's not really a kind of a good place to be.
Yeah, and that's really not where it's going to end up. George Magnus is the author of Red Flags, Why China is in Jeopardy, and it's available everywhere. We could talk for a long time. You can get the book and get into it yourself there. So it's Red Flags. It's available everywhere, I assume?
Yeah, it is, and certainly available on Amazon.
Okay, and is there a place that they can follow you, website, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I have a website. It's www.georgemagnus.com.
Perfect. George, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, I learned things that I haven't known before. There's a vast sea of knowledge. All right, that's enough. All right. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today. I hope that this has been fruitful for you. There's been plenty of fruit involved. Tomorrow is my birthday, and I'm going through a thing. I don't like birthdays, and tomorrow I will expound upon that. I think some of you agree that birthdays are not something to be celebrated. They are something to be, avoided. So, everybody around me says, happy birthday, happy birthday, oh, happy birthday, how old are you? Oh, no, 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 you don't get it. Here's the way that works. You celebrate your birthdays until you're 30. Then you do it questionably till you're about 50. When you hit 50, all bets are off, baby. Don't you dare discuss my birthday ever again. it's true. It's true. Anyway, we'll go through that psychosis tomorrow, because everybody has birthdays. I think we have that in common, the way that we approach them, the feelings that we get from them. Yeah, it's interesting. But until tomorrow, do the best you can with what you have. and I wish you peace.